ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
So decide this 8, 12, 13 chapter.
Amanitvamadam bitvam
Ahimsa
kshantirarjavam Acharyopasanam shaucham Stairyamatma vinigraha इन्द्रियार्थेषु वैराग्यम् अनहंकारमेव च जन्म मृत्यु जरा व्याधि दुःख दोषानुदर्शनम् असक्तिरनभिष्वङ्ग पुत्रदार गृहादिषु नित्यं च समचित्तत्वं इष्टानिष्टोपपत्तिषु मयि चानन्ययोगेन भक्तिरव्यभिचारिणी विविक्तदेशसेवित्वं अरतिर्जनसंसदि भद्यात्मज्ञाननित्यत्वम् तत्त्वज्ञानार्थदर्शनम् एतज्ज्ञानमिति प्रोक्तम् अज्ञानं यदतोऽन्यथा।
ह्यूमिलिटी, प्राइडलेसनेस, नॉन वायलेंस, टॉलरेंस, सिंप्लिसिटी, अप्रोचिंग अ बोनाफाइड स्पिरिचुअल मास्टर, क्लीनलीनेस, स्टेडीनेस, सेल्फ कंट्रोल, renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, absence of false ego, the perception of the evil of birth, death, old age and disease, detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home and the rest, even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events, constant and unalloyed devotion to me, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of self-realization, and philosophical search for the absolute truth. All these I declare to be knowledge, and besides this, whatever there may be is ignorance. So last week you all saw the video of Truths of Life. So what did you learn from that video show? It was shown for the purpose of showing what Krishna speaks here, Janma Mrita Jara Vyadi and Dukkha Doshanu Darshanam. So one before that is Anahankaram Evacha, isn't it? This is absence of false ego. Then comes the perception of evil, of birth, death, old age and disease, and then detachment from the entanglement with children, wife, home and the rest. We will try to see these two, three items today. Prabhupada says here, false ego means accepting this body as oneself. When one understands that he is not his body and his spirit soul, he comes to his real ego. Ego is there. False ego is condemned, but not the real ego. In the Vedic literature, Brahadaranyaka Upanishad, it is said, Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman, I am Spirit. This I am, the sense of self, also exists in the liberated stage of self-realization. The sense of I am is ego. But when the sense of I am is applied to this false body, it is false ego. When the sense of self is applied to reality, that is real ego. There are some philosophers who say, we should give up our ego. But we cannot give up our ego, because ego means identity. we ought, of course, to give up the false identification with the body. So, anahankaram evacha, one of the processes of knowledge here, as Lord Krishna says here, is to give up the false ego. Vyasadeva in Mahabharata says there are two big stumbling blocks for a person in the path of spiritual life that constitute bondage. He says, what are they? I and mine, he says. And there are two great things that can free one from all entanglement, he says. That is to realize, not I, not mine. Just opposite of this. So, the feeling of I and mine, especially with respect to this body, that is called as ahankar. Like, for example, sometimes people boast about themselves due to this ahankar. I was a chairman of that such and such committee. So I was the number one man. Some people say like that, isn't it? Or sometimes they say, I was the first one to bring computer into Pune. Or I was the first one to do this, the first one to do that. Or some people say, there is no one who can do this except me. I only know the expertise how to do it. Or I only have the technology for this. No one else has. So if you observe these statements, either they fall in the category of adoration or in the category of distinction. Like if somebody says, I have been a chairman of such and such committee, and I have been... Like many people, when you ask them, who are you, which company you work with, many people say, below me so many people work. I have so many people working under me. And above me there are only two. I am the third person in the company, or I am the second person in the company, I am the first person in the company. So, this is something that will lead one to adoration naturally. Distinction means there is no one who can do this except me. I am a computer wizard, or I am special in this. No one in this field, no one has learned it except me. Or I have published so many papers, or I have done so much. Or I have got the award, this award, that award and all that. So, people try to put themselves distinctly. I was the first one to do this. I am the first one to place the flag on Mount Everest. In the same manner, we may be the first in many fields. Sometimes have you observed that some field is practically unknown to anyone? Nowadays there are so many fields of research. The science, technology, engineering, everything has grown in such proportion nowadays. There are thousands of international magazines coming, publishing so many papers. And somebody might have done some trivial thing, he may be the first one to do something in some unknown field. But people certainly feel very proud that I am the first one to do that. So this is a desire for distinction. For no one can do which I can do. So these are all manifestations of one's false ego. Ahankar. Ahankar means I. I am the doer. I did it. Because such people think everything is happening because of me only. They get a very strong feeling like that. The biggest problem is we attach too much importance to ourselves. That's the biggest problem. In fact, when we attach too much importance to ourselves, then naturally we worry too much about not losing that good name. And we have a lot of anxiety to hold on to that good name. Naturally, we will not want anyone to be in par with us or anyone to excel us, because we want to hold on to that position very firmly. So, the biggest problem is to think that everything is happening because of me, and to attach too much importance to ourselves. That is actually called as ahankar, I. The I stands more pronounced than the work itself. The work done may be very trivial, but I is like Mount Everest, stands very prominently. So, this is actually called as Nityahankar. So what is the result of thinking like that in terms of I? Is there any problem? Because it is very pleasing to the person who thinks in that way. Especially one is in material consciousness. One feels very pleasurable to say things like this to other people. The problem is that we consider ourselves so important and so prominent and so outstanding that we want the whole world will, with all its situations, to change itself to suit our needs. That's the result of thinking too much great about oneself. Because if I am so important, I am such a special person, I am such an important person, I am such a big person, and I have done something very outstanding, great, which no one else has done, I am the first one to do such a thing, then the whole world looks like all trivial, all small petty toys in front of you, and everything is meant for your manipulation, and everyone should be at your beck and call, and all situations should adjust themselves to suit what you want them to be. So in this way, one puts oneself in a very funny role of thinking oneself to be all in all supreme controller, just like Indra thought about himself. So Indra suffered from the same disease of false ego. So Indra was thinking that if I don't give rains, Vrijavasis cannot survive. So because of that, they have to do puja for me. If they don't do puja for me, where will they go? They won't get water, they will all perish without any water. So year after year he has been getting puja. So one certain year when Krishna saw false ego in Indra, Krishna told the Vrijavasis, don't do puja for him. Rather do puja for Govardhan. So when they did Govardhan puja, Lord Krishna accepted all the offerings by taking the form of Govardhan. And all this was being watched by Indra. He became furious. Actually, Indra was thinking that I will hold on the water, I will not give. But when these things happened, he gave water and throwing tantrums on all the Vrijavasis, whatever shout he could shout about them, whatever blasphemy he could do for Krishna, he did. And he threw water, but not out of love, thinking that let Vrijavasis flourish. But he wanted to use the water to destroy them. In fact, he sent the Sambhartika clouds to inundate the Vrindavan and kill all the innocent animals like the cows and calves. So Krishna understood this is out of season, such hailstorm. And Indra is certainly very angry. Actually, Krishna's idea was that only. He wanted to allow the false ego of Indra to fully manifest so that he'll become shameful after that. So Krishna allowed him to exhibit fully. And then Krishna referred to Govardhan, he'll give protection to all the Vrijavasis. It is said, a devotee of the Lord, no one can even pluck out one hair of a devotee, it is said. You know this, Jako Rake Sanya Marna Sakai Koi, Balana Banka Kar Sakai. You heard this. No one can do anything to a devotee. Devotee is completely protected. So when Indra saw that these people have taken shelter of Krishna and they are protected so thoroughly, and I couldn't do anything, and Krishna thoroughly humiliated him. And Krishna pricked the balloon of Indra's false ego and brought him down to hands and knees. And Indra surrendered to Krishna after that. And Indra admitted, my dear Krishna, I thought that I am autonomous in the running of the affairs of the universe. That was my fault. Actually, I am not autonomous. In fact, I am working under you. You are the supreme controller. I am simply your servant. And I am supposed to do things as per your wish, as per your order. But in between some or other, I foolishly thought that I am autonomous. I am independent and I don't have anybody above me. I thought in such a foolish way that I even cursed you, I blasphemed you. I am a great fool. So he admitted. So people who think themselves to be too important or outstanding or the first one to do this, first one to do that, or people who are too fond of such distinction, caught up in this I and mine disease. So such people will want the whole situation to change. So Indra wanted the situation to change as per his desire. he wanted all the Vrijavasis to be at his beck and call, not knowing that they are all Krishna's devotees. Because he considered himself to be the supreme controller. In this way, one suffers terribly, mentally, when one has false ego. Because the world is in a very dynamic state of flux. Always things are changing. Nothing is permanent in this world. So, even our positions are not permanent. Somebody's Indra is put in one position, later on that Indra will go off and another Indra will come. So Indra's position is not permanent either. And the situations are also not permanent. They also keep changing. And they are not changing as per our will and wish. They are all changing according to the Kala, according to the will of Providence, and according to the desire of the Lord. Everything is changing around us. And we cannot control everyone and everything around us. We should be aware of this fact. Everyone and everything is not under our control. You know, there is a story of a tiger which was living in a forest. He was actually threatening all the animals. You know, the tiger was so ferocious. Any animal that would pass through that particular portion of the jungle was always under threat that he will be attacked by the tiger, or at least threatened by the tiger. And tiger would roar, and the animals would flee from there. In this way, he was almost like a supreme controller. One day elephant came passing by. It was a huge elephant. Sometimes you see, even in our city, majestic elephant you see, huge, and how it walks, waving the head. So this elephant was walking with closed eyes, majestically. So the tiger sat right in the midway. The tiger asked, and the tiger shouted at the elephant. He said, "Who is that coming to my place? How dare you have come to this place? No animals have the courage to step into this place. If I roar, they will flee in all directions. Who are you, this new animal who has come here?" So it seemed that the elephant didn't pay any attention. He just walked straight. And as he came close to the tiger, he used his trunk to catch the body of the tiger like this. And he pounded him on the ground. Boom, 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 boom. Like he washed the clothes, you know. Like he pounded. And then at last, after pounding his head and tail side and head side and everything practically flat, then he threw him up in the sky. And the tiger took several saucers, several dives, and then fell on the backside of the elephant, practically on his hands and knees, his chin touching the ground. And the tiger was looking at the elephant's back. And the tiger asked, "Okay, if you don't wish to answer my question, then why don't you just go away? Why do you have to beat me like this?" So the tiger is compared to the tiny living entities like all of us. All of us, in our own small situation, we are like the tiger. We think we can threaten people, we can control people, we can manipulate things, and we have extra edge over others, we have power. So I stands out very prominently. But sometimes the elephant is compared to the power of the three modes. The three modes of material nature, they whip all the living entities. No one is an exception in this world, except the pure devotees. So, just as the elephant whipped the tiger, similarly our swamitva, or prabhutva, or swamitva, feeling of mastership, that is devastated by Maya Devi, by material nature. So, one who is afflicted by false ego becomes a fool. Like Indra looked like a fool, he admitted himself as a fool. That is why, as devotees, we always try to clearly discriminate between the bodily designations and the soul's designation. Soul's designation is we are servant of Krishna. And the bodily designations can be many. You may be so-and-so in the office, you may be... every one of us may be having some so-called frills attached to our name and position. So a devotee doesn't take those things very seriously. Because they're all temporary. They all will be finished by the passage of time. So ahankar means to identify with the temporary. That is ahankar. To identify with the temporary position, temporary designation, temporary body. So that is ahankar, false ego. So if you are wise, it is said, that's a saying, that the wise learn many valuable lessons from the fools, and the fools don't learn as much as the wise learn from the fools. It is said, what it means is, when fools behave foolishly, the wise take note of foolish behavior and they become more careful and cautious. But the fools never learn from the wise, it is said. So who is a fool? One who has ahankar is a fool. Because he is always centered around I and mine. So in our life also we can see how many times we have spoken about I and mine. I only have been speaking till now about the I. We can also talk about mine. Mine means the possessions that are around us. How we are extremely attached to them. The things that belong to us. Of course the domain keeps on increasing. Just like Alexander, it's not that Alexander was starving for food, that he had to wage a war against someone and, you know, have some land, piece of land for cultivating food. He was simply greedy. He wanted to have dominion over others. He wanted to increase his dominion far and wide. In fact, he wanted to be the king of the whole world. So that is why he expanded everywhere. In the same way, there is a strong desire in every living being to spread his influence as far as possible, as much as possible. Like, you know, I have control over this, I have control over this also, that also, this also, and so many. And as far as possible, spread the control far and wide, and have everyone and everything under our influence. Actually, this is done only by one person, who is God. He is the one who is able to do that very smoothly without much trouble. He has control over everyone. He is the master of everyone. So there is a tendency to want to become that master, to become that God. That is why we want to increase our possessions. And because we think that possessing many things makes me a great master. We think like that. I am master of so many things. So this I and mine, that says anahankarameyavacha, he says. Anahankarameyavacha means one of the processes of knowledge is to strenuously one should free oneself from this ahankar. As Vyasa says in Mahabharata, I was telling you, I and mine, these are the two constituents which lead to bondage. And not me, not mine. So these things actually lead one to liberation. That means one should constantly and deliberately make an effort to remember that although something is happening through me, I am not the only person who has done it. Everything is not happening only because of me. There are so many factors. The circumstances are arranged by the Lord. God's support itself is there. And there are many other people also are involved in bringing out some wonderful thing. So, I am not the only one. So we should be aware of it. That, like there was one devotee called Narottamananda Prabhu. So he was the head pujari in Vrindavan temple for several years. So once there was a festival in Vrindavan, he must have been a head pujari for practically around 10-15 years or so. And everyone would take his permission to worship Radha, Shyam Sundar, for dressing Krishna Balram. Without his permission, nobody can enter the deity room. So several years he had done. Now also he has a place in Vrindavan. So once there was some festival in Vrindavan, so there, during the Prabhupada festival, they were glorifying this devotee, Narottamananda Prabhu. They were telling that this devotee has done, you know, 15 years of head pujari service in Vrindavan. And so much wonderful development he did. Now you can see how wonderful the deities are worshipped, and Vrindavan temple is blossoming so wonderfully. It's all because of his work. So when he was given the mic, when he was about to speak, he said, you know, when you see a glacier, generally people see only the tip, which is in the top. So that is only a small tip. So my position is like that, he said. But then if you see, when the water level goes down, you can see there is a huge glacier down below. Because people get to see only the top. Similarly, he said, I was of course the head pujari, but it is not that I developed everything. There are so many people below me who have developed it over the years. And such things cannot be done by one man's job. Many are involved. And also he said that Lord himself arranges everything for himself. We are simply a nimitta. We are simply an instrument. Like in Pune, we are going to have a new temple now, in Carthage. So a beautiful temple is going to spring up there, in that big place of practically 8 or 9 acres of land. And thousands of people are going to visit. So now, even if you work very hard and we raise funds and we try to make the temple, we should never think that we are making it. Actually, when Lord wants to manifest, just like the sun manifesting in the sky, sun itself manifests in the morning. It's not by your shouting or my shouting that the sun rises in the morning. Similarly, the Lord also manifests himself. Wherever he wants to manifest, Lord will manifest himself. And wonderful things will happen. And Lord will use all of our senses, all of our resources, skills and abilities, everything to make us run from here and there. And he will use all of us as instruments, and ultimately wonderful temple will come up. So, if somebody becomes bogged up with the wrong idea that I am the doer, I am doing this, I am managing this, without me nothing can move. So that's a very foolish idea. That is actually called as ahankar. That's what Krishna is saying, anahankaram evacha. One should give up this kind of ahankar. Because when one is caught up in this ahankar, then one cannot approach. That's the saying, God will not reside in the heart of a person who thinks in terms of I and mine always. Because it is said, God gets repelled from the heart of a person who thinks I have done it. So, if God has resided in the heart, then we have to understand that God has done it. Just like, for example, somebody batters the door. So you open the door and you ask that person. Naturally that person say, Jayadev Prabhu opens the door. You say, Jayadev Prabhu opened the door. Now somebody wants to tell more close to the truth, you can say, Jayadev Prabhu's right hand opened the door. Or somebody may say, Jayadev Prabhu's thumb and what do you call this finger? Pinpointing finger. Index finger. Index finger and the thumb and cooperatively they opened the latch of the door. You can say. Now how many of you will say like that? If I ask you, who opened the door, if I ask you? Jayadev Prabhu's right hand thumb and the index finger opened the door. How many of you will say? Anyone is going to say like that? You naturally say Jayadev Prabhu opened the door, isn't it? Similarly, ultimately the activity is done by Krishna only. We are only his part and parcel. Although we may do it, we are able to do it because we are a part of Krishna. That's why we are able to do it. We are a part and parcel of Krishna, so we are able to do it. So there is no special credit attached to us. So every work we do in this world, we should think that it is a work allotted by Krishna to me. We should always consider God as the allotter of work and we as a nimitta or an instrument who is doing that work. And if we have to always perceive that God is supplying the strength, God is supplying the buddhi, God is supplying the resources, God is practically enveloping us with all necessary things for us to succeed in the work. And we are just agreeing to do what he says. That's our only credit. Not wanting to do something else what God does not want us to do. So that is the only credit. Otherwise everything else is done by him. Just like a farmer was feeling a little lazy to, you know, work in the field. So God asked him, why do you feel lazy? What have you done? God asked, who gave you the seed? So the man said, God, you gave the seed. Who gave you the land? Oh God, you gave the land. Who gave you the rains? Oh God, you only gave the rains. Now who kept the ability in the seed to sprout and germinate and grow into a plant and produce yield? And the man said, God, you only have done that. Now what are you doing? And the man said, I'm just sowing the seed and watering it, that's all. Yes, that's what I want you to do, God said. So our contribution is only probably 10% or 5%. God's contribution is 95%. You can see that. That is why we should not feel ahankar. Anahankar may vacha. And also many times when we do work, we see so many things fall in place automatically. We don't know how. It's God's arrangement. It's not that it's by our talent things are moving in this world. And even if it is so, the talent also is given by Krishna only. Buddhir buddhi matam asmi balam balavatam chaham, isn't it? He says that. Even if you think by your buddhi only you are doing everything, and that buddhi also comes from me only, he says. If you are doing it with your bal, that bal also comes from me only. Balam balavatam chaham. I am the strength of the strong. I am the intelligence of the intelligent. So, a spiritualist is distinguished from a materialist. based on this one point, that spiritual is always thinks that God is the ultimate doer. I am simply His child. He is the ultimate doer of everything. And I am insignificant. I have no power, I am insignificant, and He is doing something through me. So this humility, this freedom from false ego keeps him with a cool head to perform the other spiritual activities very nicely. That's why this is counted as one of the processes of knowledge. Because one who is having the ahankar, his head will be heated up. He will always be thinking high of oneself. And that drains most of the energy of an individual. Because, you know, when one considers oneself to be the doer, then as much as we take the pride, when someone is insulted, that will be terribly painful. The degree to which we are proud of what we do, to that degree the insult will be terribly painful, intolerable for us. The degree to which you considered yourself a non-doer, and Krishna to be the doer, then even when you are insulted, you will tell the other people that what can we do ultimately, you know, we can only do our best. So Krishna is in control. If Krishna does not want something to happen, what can we do? We can only try. You will say like that. You will take the insults very lightly. So better that we don't take the credit of the activities ourselves with pride. Because if we do that, then we will have to be ready to face the insult also. Insult will be very painful. So Krishna does not want a spiritual practitioner to be simply tossed by pride and infamy, fame and infamy. He doesn't want one to be tossed. He just wants one to be free of this false identification, of false ego. False ego. Actually, false ego is the root of everything in this world. Like, for example, there is a verse which says, false ego is the one big iron curtain that separates the jiva from God. The jiva is not able to see Krishna face to face because this big curtain of false ego separates us. So once that false ego is removed, one can see Krishna face to face. That ahankar is removed. Ahankar is the first thing we contact when we come into material world. Ahankar is the last thing you leave when you leave the material world and go to spiritual world. So that's why making a deliberate attempt to give up is a very good idea. Instead of waiting for this false ego to go away by itself, one can make a deliberate attempt. It's like, you know, we can begin with saying in our words, it's all Guru's mercy, it's all Krishna's mercy, it's all wonderfully happening by Lord's desire. So one can keep saying these things, gradually they will sink into our heart when we say like that. And one can also observe one's speech. In my speech, do I brag about myself? How much do I brag about myself when I talk to other people? First the desire is there in the heart and then it comes out of the mouth. You can easily see that. Sometimes you are afraid that nobody should know that, nobody should not know that I did it. Isn't that a very strong desire? So nobody should think that somebody else did it. That the whole world know that I only did it. Sometimes people shamelessly go and declare to each and everyone. In fact, a lot of people say they don't have time. One of the reasons they don't have time is they spend most of the time in broadcasting their glories. That's why they don't have time. That's one of the reasons. Because they are eager to go from person to person and tell what all one has done, how much burden one has taken, and what all great things they have done. So why they tell others, they hope and pray that, you know, that will be spreaded to more and more people. And in this way the world will come to know their glories. And they spend a lot of time in that. So all this is actually exhibition of one's ahankar, mithya ahankar. And it is a waste of time on one hand. After speaking so much about oneself, one will still feel empty in the heart. So you will have a practical experience of this, because we all have done it. In our heart you can see, you go and tell about yourself, you praise yourself, and then you close the door and you see yourself, how will you feel? You will feel very, very empty inside. But when one praises others, gives away the credit to others, then one feels very nice within. Your heart feels very healthy. Because the nature of soul is to be selfless. The nature of soul is to be selfless. Always give the credit to Krishna, give the credit to others. Not take it all oneself. So even as Rana Sam used to always say, put others first, put yourself behind. This is one of his famous things that he used to speak in his lecture. Putting others first and putting oneself behind. Like he used to say, even when we are preaching, he would say that we should not preach in a mood by which you say, I am sitting in the top of the well and telling the other person, come, come, you conditioned soul, come up, take this rope, pick it up. And then you keep on giving him curses, you conditioned soul, you fallen soul, who is an andakupam, come out. So that is not the attitude with which we should elevate the people. So he would say that, no, you should go into the well and you should go below the person and lift him on your head, like this, and push him from the bottom. And that person wonder, hey, who is pushing me from down? And you take him above. So he would say like that. So he would say this is actually the way of preaching. So he would say that whenever we see people who are not, who are not devotees, immediately the mind says, see, that person is a demon or whatever. You know? So he would say, no, don't see them like that. We can think that he is also a devotee, I am also a devotee, but I am very fortunate because I have already met, you know, Vaishnavas, I have, you know, I am well situated by their mercy. But this person is yet to achieve the mercy, that's the only difference. When he achieves the mercy, he will be better than me. So one should think like that. Then this next one, you all saw the movie, Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadi Dukkha Dosha Anudarshanam. There one striking sentence Prabhupada says, which I would like to read there. He says, unless we have a pessimistic view of this material life, considering the distresses of birth, death, old age and disease, there is no impetus for our making advancement in spiritual life. Prabhupada is saying. The word pessimism is hated by the materialistic people. But Prabhupada still uses it here. One should have a pessimistic viewpoint about the material world. What he means is, one should not think at any time that everything is going on nicely. Seems that there is not much problem. Hare Krishna devotees are exaggerating too much. That life is full of suffering. Life is full of problems. I don't find so many problems. Sometimes people think like that. But anybody thinks like that, you have to just wait for some time. You will get to come face to face with problems. So, pessimistic viewpoint about life in the material world means one should always remember smaranityam anityatam. Always remember that this material world is a temporary place. I have been deputed on duty to come to this material world for some period of time. What is the duty? To reform, to serve Krishna and become reformed. It's a deputation. You know, you are sent for some time and then you will be called back after some time. You cannot remain here. So you can visualize in your mind, you know, you are descending from the spiritual world, you are coming to the earth, you are put, after some time you will be withdrawn from the material world. And when you are withdrawn, you are taken away, you will see all the things that are dear to you will be left behind. That will be left behind in the world. Our post, our position, our things, the people whom you love very much, everything will be left behind and you will be called alone. And you have to go to the next destination. So it's like a voyage, or it's like a journey, a short journey. One should always remember that. Life is temporary. If one wants to go back to God, one should always remember that this life is temporary. And it is not an imagination, it's a reality. Everyone has to die. Jatasya dhruvam mrityur, dhruvam janma mrityasya cha. At the time of birth, you are... See, Prabhupada says, how God is so wonderful, you see. We worry too much about our life, but God has made arrangement for everything. Right at the time of birth, as soon as the child is born, the mother's breast gets the ability to provide milk to the child. Correct? And the mammary glands become activated. Immediately mother is able to give milk to the child. That means as soon as you are born, God has arranged for your food. How great is it, you see. And as soon as the child is born, immediately the linga, immediately the sex organ is also created along with that. Like the child is a male or a female, as soon as the child is born. That is also created along with the birth only. Of course, the ability to reproduce will gradually manifest as the child grows for a period of time to the adolescence. And then when the child gets adolescence and gets married, then one may reproduce. But then at the time of birth only, there is provision made for eating and mating. Both are made at the time of birth only. And also, there is provision made for one's protection also. a mother protects a child from the too much heat and too much cold from the animals or from reptiles. So the mother is there to offer protection to the child always. So the child doesn't have to defend anything. Even before the child opens the eyes, there is protection offered to the child. You can see that. Of course, the child is allowed to sleep as many hours as the child wants. There is no duty allotted to the child when the child is born. Because there are no anxieties for a child. So, in this way, there is provision made for eating, sleeping, mating, defending right at the time of birth. But we people, when we grow up, Prabhupada says that we become too much worried about this eating, sleeping, mating, defending, and we forget God who made that provision at the time of birth only. Forgetting Him, we do everything else, He says. So, one should also remember at the time of birth, the time of death also is decided. Jatasya dhruvam mrityu dhruvam janma mrityu cha. Tasma adaparihariyati natvam shochit mahasya. Krishna says to Arjuna that there is no point lamenting about death, because everyone who is born in this world will have to die one day. It's only a matter of what quality of life you have led when you are living as a human being in this world. You know, when we live, we have to think about this particular matter, that assume that my dead body is lying and there are so many people who will come there. Try to imagine, what do you want the people to talk about you? You know, when we make mission statement for our life, Bhaktivedanta Swami speaks about this. Bhaktivedanta Swami speaks on die before you die. What do you mean by die before you die? Imagine that we are not imagining something that's not going to happen. We are only imagining something that is surely going to happen someday. And what is that something? That is death. So when we die, what do you want the world to think about you? You should have done something valuable in your life for the welfare of others. And they should have benefited from you. And if they are grateful that this person did something to us, and that something what they gave them should actually nourish their relationship with God. So if you have done something valuable to the world. So it shouldn't happen that when a person passes away, people think good that this fellow passed away. He was creating too much havoc. He was creating so much trouble. You should not get a name like that from the people. Thank God, after creating so much of havoc, this fellow passed away now. Now you can't create any more trouble. You shouldn't get a name like that. So, wise people, those who are in the path of spiritual life, they think about death well in advance. Like if you see the Buddhists, for example, they meditate on a stinking body, can you imagine? Some people, some yogis, even Ranaswami was telling, when he was a yogi, once he went to the forest, the Shmashan. So he was sitting and watching how a dead body is burnt. So he said when the fire was put on the head, he said the flesh was immediately it was consumed in no time. And then after some time the eyes popped out, gave the sound, both of them came out. And the skull cracked. You heard the sound of the skull cracking? It gives a sound. So he said ultimately, the bones sometimes rise above, they come over the body. That's the only thing left. That's the. And the person's body is consumed, practically a pile of ashes, nothing more. So one may not want to think about these things, but these are realities. That's what happens to the body which we cherish the most. When Siddhartha saw the dead body passing by, he had a serious question, why should a person die? But nowadays, nobody carries a dead body like that. Very rarely we find that. People, put a dead body in an ambulance van and take it to electric crematorium. Then you're waiting outside in a very nice AC room. Then they put the body inside and they nicely pack the ashes in a packet and they come and give it to the relatives. And nobody actually feels anything seriously has happened wrong. Nobody feels about it. But in Vedic life you will see in Vedic life people highlight those things which are to be highlighted. And in Vedic life they don't highlight things which are not so much important. For example, you will never hear in Vedic life the sex life was so much highlighted, or the man-woman connection is so much highlighted in big posters, big this thing. Why? Because everyone knows this is a nuisance that's there in everyone's mind, the attraction for the opposite sex, and it is a part of life that one has to surpass, one has to overcome. So this was not so much highlighted. Although men and women got married and men and women would have children, man and woman would, even in the public, they would not behave in ways that are awkward looking. In Vedic life, people behave with dignity, as Swapa says. In modern times, that which should not be highlighted is big, highlighted in a very big way. Big posters and everything. And death is such an important thing because everyone is going to die. And if you see traditionally in the Vedic life, people would take a person and they would play kettle drums. Everyone will come out, you know. What is the sound? You peep out of the window and you find, you know, somebody is carrying the, you know, dead body and people are putting flowers. There's a silence everywhere, you know, except that sound, you know. Dead body carried. Immediately one fears, you know, this will come to me also one day. You know? I will also have to leave my body at home. You know? Isn't it? That makes one think seriously, you know. What is life? Huh? Where are we going to go? There is a very meaningful song. So of course the song is in Tamil. But I'll tell you in Tamil, you can... because I used to meditate on these things before. So it says, வீடு வரை உறவு வீதி வரை மனைவி காடு வரை பிள்ளை கடைசி வரை யாரோ. You know what he is saying? All my relatives will be staying at home only when the dead body is being carried away. And the wife will come only up to the doorstep and watch the dead body being carried, and she may cry. And then the son will go up to the forest to put fire to the head of the father. Kadesi vai yaro, saying, who is the person who will come with me beyond that point? Anybody knows the answer to this riddle? Super soul, yeah. That time I didn't know. Now I know after coming to Islam. Super soul is your only friend. Suradam sarvabhutana, who will come with you after that point of time. Same thing Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings. Keno Hare Krishna Naam Hari Bole Mano Prana Kandena. Hare Krishna Naam Hari Bole Mano Prana Kandena. Oh, my dear Lord, why my mind? Oh, my mind, why are you not crying when you are chanting the holy names of Krishna? Don't you know? He is telling his tongue and the mind. Don't you know that one day when you die, four people will lift you on a stretcher and they'll carry you to the forest. And at that point of time, they'll put fire into the mouth. Oh, my dear tongue, at that time you'll be burnt. And from that point of time, you'll not be able to chant the holy names anymore. Now we can chant Hare Krishna. Isn't it? Because we are alive. When the fire is put into the mouth, perished. Tongue is finished. Then you cannot chant anymore. Why don't you cry when you chant the holy names of Krishna? He's asking. So, sometimes people may think if you talk so much about death, you know, why are you talking like a Mayavadi, so much about death? But even Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about death. And he talks about the body being carried to the Shmashan, Shmashane Gatete, all that he thinks, isn't it? So he's contemplating these things. So it is not off track from what our acharyas are contemplating. Such contemplation is in line with our acharyas, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So, it is not some dry renunciation to think of these things. When Navagindra Swami came to Pune, he was telling, he said, if you want to become really serious in spiritual life, you should think about the day of death. Death will come any point of time. So, you know, we are given some opportunity now. Right now we have an opportunity by which we will be able to become Krishna conscious. So, when we say at the point of birth, your death is decided, what is it like? It's like, imagine somebody is going in a plane far above in the sky. And somebody is pushed off from the plane without a parachute. Can you imagine what would be his flight? So the body would come, you know, probably upside down. You know, it will come to the ground, crashing to the ground. So from that point of time, he is kicked off from the plane. After the time he contacts the ground is the lifespan of a person. It's like the lifespan. Because the body is coming down, it is sure enough to crash. In the same way, this material body is sure to be crushed one day. There is no doubt about that. That is why we say, as sure as death, we say. So a serious person, by contemplating on death, one can become detached from material enjoyment. By contemplating on the death. So, Similarly about the disease, about the old age. Generally, unless these things come in people's lives, they don't take it seriously. Like somebody is told, you have blood cancer, immediately they run to the doctor, they run to devotees, now they want. Like for example, who was that? One of the disciples of Prabhupada in the early days, one high-grade Prabhu. For several years, he was out of ISKCON, but at one point of time, when he came to know he had a deadly disease and he may not live longer, he immediately ran to the devotees. Of course, he was blessed by Prabhupada. Prabhupada had told that he will surely go back to Godhead. So, we may not know the danger of disease or death now, but these things are inevitabilities that will come in our life. That's what Krishna is saying here. Dukkha dosha anudarshanam. You should see it, perceive them, even when you are in a normal healthy condition. We should perceive them. That means we should see that people are suffering. We should see the old age, suffering of old age. We should see the suffering of diseases. Like you go to the sasoon, no? Sometimes to meet our devotees. Somebody's hand is broken, somebody's leg is broken, everyone is crying, the doctor is giving injection, people are crying, and some people are passing stool in the this thing only, bedding only, and they have to eat and sleep in the bed practically for months together, some people. So, what a contrast. You go to the movie, sometimes you watch a movie, there is some duet song going on, hero, heroine. So life looks very jolly, and you go to the hospital, you see the practical reality. Isn't it? It's like such a contrast, isn't it? So things are very nice only in a movie, when it comes to practical reality, there are a lot of problems. So one should perceive the problems of the material world. It's very important. So one will be having the impetus to want to get out of this world, which is very important. Having a very ardent desire to get out of this world is very, very essential. If you don't have that type of impetus, you will be born birth after birth, again and again, repeatedly. So there is a strong tendency for material enjoyment in the conditioned soul. Very strong tendency. Even after being repeatedly kicked in millions of births and deaths, the living entity still says, maybe there is something in this world. Wait a minute, let me give a try. Maybe. He is not convinced. So, the conviction will come when one contemplates on these four problems of life. Birth, old age, disease, death. One devotee, Harishadipu, was telling Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was talking about abortion. He told Prabhupada, do you know my mother was planning to abort me when I was in the womb? Now, by Krishna's grace, it seems that Krishna wanted me to be born and take shelter of my spiritual master. Some or other the plan changed, so I survived. You are saying. Suppose I just see how vulnerable is our life. Kamala Dalajala Jimanatalamala. So in the womb also sometimes the child dies, in the womb itself. Or even if the child doesn't die, sometimes the parents kill the child. Even if the child survives and the child is born, sometimes the child doesn't live for long. Or even if the child grows to youth, there is always a danger of disease or death or accident or padam padam yatvi padam natesham. Metal world is a very delicate place. The body is very, very delicate, fragile. It is bound to destruction. So one should not take this metal body to be very great. It is simply vulnerable. If one studies the metal body, at every point of time there are so many activities happening inside the body. It's like a big factory that's going on. There's a lot of energy we put in running this body itself. It's like a big factory. So prakritisthani karshati, when we say manashasthani indriyani prakritisthani karshati, this body itself is like a big baggage we are carrying with us, and so much effort goes in maintaining this body, in terms of giving it eating and fulfilling the demands of the body. So Krishna is telling this famous point on dukkha dosha anudarshanam. Perceive on this dukkha, contemplate on the dukkha. There is a verse by Devahuti. She is saying, asad indriya tarshanat tasyattvam tamasandhya. No, not this verse. Nirvinna nitaram bhuman asad indriya tarshanat yena sambhavya manena prapannadam tamasabho. You see, this material body, it makes us identify with it very strongly. Because we are identifying with it very strongly, due to which our material senses are always disturbed. But this material body is like a blanket over the spirit soul. These are all cheating senses, the eyes, the nose, tongue and ears and all what we have, these are all like a blanket over the soul who has real senses. The soul is a servant of Krishna. He is blissfully engaged in Krishna service. But once this blanket comes on the soul of the material body, then you start identifying with the material senses and you feel disturbance. So we feel disturbance. Disturbance, what kind of disturbance? We feel material attachment. See, these things are all connected. That is why the next one he says, Asaktihi, he says, Anabhishvanga, Putradharagrihadishu, he says. So, attachment develops because of identifying with the body, because of the false ego. And because of not perceiving the sufferings of the world, because everything looks very attractive and everything seems to be created for enjoyment in this world. So that's why he says, Asaktir Anabhishvanga Putradharagrihadishu. So I would like to read some quotes of Prabhupada about this particular statement. So here he says, see Prabhupada is saying here, as for detachment from children, wife and home, it is not meant that one should have no feelings for these. They are natural objects of affection. But when they are not favorable to spiritual progress, then one should not be attached to them. The best process for making the home pleasant is Krishna consciousness. Yeah. So we have to talk both sides about this point. I would like to read a quote from Prahlad. Prahlad's statement. See, Prahlad says, Katam priyaya anukampitaya sangam rahasyam ruchiramscha mantra suhritsu tat sneha sita shishunam kalaksharanam anurakti chitta. So it goes on like this. The meaning is like this. See what Prahlad says. How can a person who is most affectionate to his family, the core of his heart being always filled with their pictures, give up their association? Specifically, a wife is always very kind and sympathetic and always pleases her husband in a solitary place. Who could give up the association of such a dear and affectionate wife? Small children talk in broken language, very pleasing to hear, and their affectionate father always thinks of their sweet words. How could he give up that association? One's elderly parents and one's sons and daughters are also very dear. A daughter is especially dear to her father, and while living at her husband's house, she is always in his mind. Who could give up that association? Aside from this, in household affairs there are so many decorated items of household furniture, and there are also animals like cows and servants. Who could give up such comforts? The attached householder is like a silkworm which weaves a cocoon in which it becomes imprisoned, unable to get out. Simply for the satisfaction of two important senses, the genitals and the tongue, one is bound by material conditions. How can one escape? This is a translation from Bhagavad. This verse is 7.6.11-13. So you must have understood what Prahlad says. Prahlad is saying that how when one is at home, there are many examples of great kings, like for example King Bharata. Yo dustajan darasutan suradrajyam hrudisprishah jahav juvaivamalavat uttama shlokalalasah. It is said, Yo dustajan, very difficult to give up things. Bharat Maharaj gave up. What all he gave up? Dara means a wife, sutan means a children, suhridrajyam, the well-wishers and the kingdom, hrudisprishah. All these things really touch the heart of a person. Jahav juvaivamalavat uttama shlokalalasah. As if a person is giving up the stool after passing it in the lavatory and leaves it behind and comes away. Like that he gave up all these things of the world and went to forest, it is said. There is an example of Parikshit Maharaj also giving up everything and going to forest in Bhagavatam you read. So a question arises in mind. One of our devotees, Kiran Prabhu, is not here I think today. He had asked this question once about giving up family, giving up wife, children and home and comforts and luxuries and everything and taking sannyas. How can one do that? It's very difficult and everything. We are asking. If you see why the Shastras say these things. So for that, the first step to understand is the difference between a Grihastha and a Grihamedi. A Grihastha makes home, a ashram, for practicing devotional service. That is a Grihastha. But a Grihamedi makes the home a place of sense enjoyment for increasing his gratification more and more. So Prabhupada says, if a person makes a home a ashrama, then such a person is as good as a sannyasi, Prabhupada says. So the conditions, Prabhupada says, four conditions he says. One should chant Hare Krishna, one should take only prasadam, one should sit together along with family members and read Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, and one should worship the deities. If one does these four things, he is as good as a sannyasi, Prabhupada says, in one of his letters to his disciple. So one disciple wrote to Prabhupada saying the opposite of what we are talking here. He said, Prabhupada, I have been always trained that grihastha, householder life means it is hitvatma partham grihamanda kupam. It's like a deep dark well. Earlier I have always heard before my marriage, now after marriage I am not able to develop any attachment to my wife or children. I feel like renouncing everything. So Prabhupada wrote back to him saying, he said, you have not understood the difference between grihastha and grihamedi properly. And Prabhupada says that grihastha is one who makes the home into ashrama, a spiritual abode, by these four activities. And in this way, husband and wife actually come together only for the sake of practicing and propagating Krishna consciousness. That is their goal. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says there are two types of sadhus, he says. One are the renunciates and the other one are householders, he says. So you wonder, how is a householder a sadhu? Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes that. Why he calls him a sadhu? Because all of us, depending on our gross and subtle body, we have to accept certain things in our life that will make our consciousness favorable to Krishna consciousness. So, for example, for the gross body, one needs a home, grains, water, supply and everything for the gross body. And for the subtle body, we have a certain type of psychophysical nature, because of which one is allowed to accept the hand of a wife who will become a supporter in one's devotional service, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He says that wife should actually be accepted for supporting one in devotional service. That is the way one should accept. And in this way, when a person is trying to practice Krishna consciousness, husband and wife should actually come together only for the sake of practicing Krishna consciousness. Now a question may arise, if we have to only practice Krishna consciousness, then what is the need of marriage if there is no enjoyment in married life? So with regard to that, in 11th canto there is a very beautiful verse which Lord Krishna himself speaks to Uddhava. He says, what is the consciousness of a householder devotee? He says that a householder always tries to serve Krishna with his or her full heart, with complete dedication and surrender. But although he or she may be trying to live like that, there will always be times when one will fall victim to attachment. See, the difference between affection and attachment is, affection is given from a spiritual platform, whereas attachment is on a material platform. Attachment is based on the superficial body, bodily attraction, sensual attraction, that is called as attachment, we call it. So he says that in the Ravana Canto verse that sometimes my devotee is carried away by the waves of sense gratification. At that time, how does he behave? He says that a devotee sincerely repents. He prays to Krishna, "My dear Krishna, even if you place a million obstacles in my path to reach you, or even if I am repeatedly kicked by Maya and not able to go on with my devotional service," still a devotee says, "I'll never lose faith in you. I'll never leave your lotus feet. I will stick on to it and I'll go on practicing it." I'll read the exact sentence so it'll be more nice from Bhagavatam. I can tell you the quote also. You can note on the verse number 51. 11th canto, 20th chapter, 27th verse. Here in Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Krishna describes how a householder should act until his natural propensity for enjoying sense objects is overcome and he fully attains the characteristic of a pure devotee. So you know what Krishna says? Having awakened faith in the narrations of my glories. See, he has awakened the faith in Krishna. That means he is a householder, but his faith in Krishna and his glories has become awakened. That means he delights in Krishna consciousness. Being disgusted with all material activities. The word nirvinna is used, disgusted, which means he doesn't like the material activities, but he may be swayed by the current of material activities. It's likely. So disgusted with all material activities, knowing that all sense gratification leads to misery. This means all material activities in the world lead to sense gratification, and all sense gratification leads to misery. Which means all material activities lead to misery. So he knows that. But still being unable to renounce all sense enjoyment, my devotee remains happy and worships me with great faith and conviction. Even though he is sometimes engaged in sense enjoyment, my devotee knows that all sense gratification leads to a miserable result and he sincerely repents such activities. Dridanishchayaha, Krishna uses the word. Which means his determination to serve Krishna does not vanish or it doesn't become diminished. His determination to serve Krishna keeps on increasing despite his repeated failing in his attempts to avoid sense gratification. So now this is not only with grihasthas, even with brahmacharis. Like brahmacharis, they said brahmachari should not contemplate on Yajna Vakya says kaya vacha manasa sarvavastam susarvada sarvatra maituna tyago brahmacharyam prachakshate. He says that by thought, word and deed a brahmachari should not even contemplate for a moment on opposite sex. So now shama and dama should be 100% perfect in a brahmachari. That means dama means externally controls his senses, and shama means even in the mind he doesn't have any dreams of the opposite sex. Then one is an aishtika brahmachari. Now in the kind of situation in which modern times we are living in cities, you know, we get many reports, brahmacharis go out to market yard, they have to go in autos or bikes to buy things from the market. They get to see sights which they should not see. You know, man, woman together, they get to see posters which they are not supposed to see. So that can certainly disturb the mind because we have not arisen above false ego. That can certainly cause disturbance in the mind. According to Manu Samhita, the brahmachari should live in an ashram 50 miles radius, there should be no smell of woman. That is Brahmachari ashram. Here in another ashram, I don't know, many times we have to talk at 1 meter distance from woman. Why I am saying, the times have changed, and instead of living in the forest like rishis and munis, and the Kali Yuga situation has forced the sadhus to come into cities and preach. Like Prabhupada himself was traveling beyond overseas. Nobody would go overseas because Mlecha Chandalas are living there. According to Vedas, nobody would travel overseas. But Vaishnavas are not just Vedic. Vaishnavas actually follow the path of ultimate compassion. So Prabhupada crossed the oceans to deliver people all over the world. As far as Brahmacharya is concerned, there can be a mental fall down. Similarly, sometimes as grihasthas, there may be mental attachment. But the mood should be understood, the spirit should be understood, which is very important. Like Krishna says, yehi samsparshita bhoga dukha yoni evate, he says. That even when one falls prey to sense gratification, one should consider it disgusting and one should actually want to get out of it. For example, you go somewhere, you see some delicious food everyone is eating. It's a karmic food, it is not offered to Krishna. But the smell is so powerful that it's entering your nose and agitating your mind. Just like the Tulasi entered the nose of Chatush Kumaras and agitated their heart to become devotees of Vishnu. Some material, some your mess or hotel or anywhere. Sometimes a devotee can be agitated like that by seeing something material. Ideally speaking, you are not allowed to eat outside. You are supposed to eat only prasad. But then sometimes you may think, you know, okay, I will chant Hare Krishna and accept it. No problem. So you may buy and you may eat. So in the same manner with everything in life, with all the other activities in life, a devotee sometimes, but regretting is very important. The repenting path is very important. The devotee doesn't repent and thinks that, you know, it's all right. It's all Kali Yuga. What to do? Of course, Kali Yuga is there, but we are supposed to, even in such an age of Kali Yuga, we are supposed to lead a very ideal life if you really want to go back to Godhead. Prabhupada says, without spiritual strength, no one can approach Krishna. Prabhupada writes in one letter, without spiritual strength, no one can approach Krishna. And the spiritual strength diminishes to the degree we indulge in sense gratification. To that degree, we become weakened in our will and determination. To the degree we strictly adhere to the principles, to that degree we are detached. And to that degree we can approach Krishna very easily. Bhajante maam dridabrataha, as he says. So those who become weakened in determination gradually lose taste also to practice Krishna consciousness. So that is why one should, even as a grihastha, there are so many ideal examples. Ramananda Rai, for example, or Advaita Acharya Prabhu, or Shivas Pandit. These are all very great grihastha examples. What kind of life they lived. Ramananda Rai, he was dressing the devadasis for dancing in front of Lord Jagannath. And he was teaching some mudras and the movements of the body, how they should move to dance in front of Lord Jagannath's cart. So he was practically undisturbed. So, like Ramananda Rai or Advaita Acharya, if you see Prabhupada quotes example of Shivas Pandit, as long as the home is favorable, a husband need not be detached from home or he need not become a renunciate. But as soon as the home becomes an unfavorable place for execution of devotional service, then one should denounce the home. So two examples Prabhupada gives. One example for favorable, one for unfavorable. For favorable, Prabhupada gives the example of Shivas Pandit. Shivas Pandit's home became Shivas Angan, where his wife Malini, Malini, right? She was a very great devotee of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. Especially Lord Nityananda. She was a very, very great devotee, Malini. And Shivas also was a first class devotee. From so many of the pastimes, you come to understand. His home became like the Rasastali, in Krishna Leela. Similarly, in Lord Chaitanya's Leela, Shivasangana is called as the Rasastali. Where Lord Chaitanya comes every day along with his associates, Panchatattva, and he dances there. So his home became the place, the most holy place near, in Nadia. So, Prabhupada says, because his home was favorable, he didn't have to renounce the home. He lived at home. On the other hand, he gives the example of Swarupa mother. Swarupa mother's home was not favorable. So he renounced the home. And he went with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So that should be the basis for renunciation. Otherwise, in one of his letters, Prabhupada writes, if a man has a beautiful and submissive wife who is cooperating with him in his devotional service, to have such a wife and to strongly pursue the path of Krishna consciousness. If a person can do that, he is better than a sannyasi, Prabhupada says that. And just before that Prabhupada says, somebody may be taking on the life of a brahmachari, staying in the ashram, that is good, he says. And after that he says, but if someone is a grihastha, and he has a, see, the most important is he has a beautiful wife who is also very submissive. And Prabhupada highlights that submissive. Because sometimes if a wife is uncooperative or wife is argumentative or quarrelsome, and husband loses all peace of mind. But if wife is very submissive and cooperative and beautiful in all respects, and then the home becomes a place where a husband can develop attachment to wife. But if husband doesn't develop attachment, he engages her also in devotional service and he also advances. He is better than a sannyasi, he says. Why? Because he is living with a wife and children. And amidst that, he is able to practice Krishna consciousness very seriously. So he is better than a sannyasi. So, Prabhupada quotes here, let me see. Grihastha is also ashram. It is as good as sannyas ashram. You can accept any ashram suitable for you. But ashram means cultivation of spiritual knowledge. That is the difference between ashram and ordinary house. And Prabhupada is saying, now this building is called temple and the next building is called house. Why? The building is the same, but it is meant for cultivating spiritual knowledge. Therefore it is called temple, to understand God. The other house is meant for eating, sleeping, mating and defending. Therefore they are house. So you can change your house into temple provided you try to understand God. Then it is ashram. If a husband and wife combine together in Krishna consciousness and live together peacefully, that is very nice. However, if a husband becomes too much attached and too much attracted by his wife and forgets his duty in life, the implications of materialistic life will again resume. Without being attached by sex, the husband and wife may live together for the advancement of spiritual life. The husband should engage in devotional service and the wife should be faithful and religious according to the Vedic injunctions. Such a combination is very good. Unfortunately, the man becomes attracted to the woman simply for sex enjoyment, then family life becomes abominable. This is from Bhagavatam Purport 4.27.1. 4th canto, 27th verse. 4th canto, 27th chapter, 1st verse. Here the Prabhupada is saying in Chaitanya's introduction, it is not necessary for one to abandon his family, for there were many householders amongst Lord Chaitanya's closest devotees. What must be renounced is the propensity for material enjoyment. Although Lord Chaitanya approved of a householder having regulated sex in marriage, he was very strict with those in the renounced order and even banished Junior Haridas for glancing lustfully at a young woman. The point is that one must take up a particular path and stick to it, obeying all the rules and regulations necessary for success in spiritual life. This is another interesting letter. This is Bhagavad Gita lecture. It says, Narada is a brahmachari. Lord Brahma is also grihastha. Lord Shiva is also a grihastha. Kumar, brahmachari. Kapila, brahmachari. So there are many. Yamaraj is also a grihastha. Shukadeva Goswami is a brahmachari. So it doesn't matter whether one is a brahmachari, a householder or a sannyasi. He must try to become a confidential servant of the Lord. Then he becomes the representative of God Krishna. This is Bhagavad Gita 13.12 purport. 13.12 Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada is saying about detachment. One can make his home very happy if one is in full Krishna consciousness by four principles. Chant Hare Krishna, accept prasadam, read and discuss Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, engage in deity worship. If following these four principles, if one is following these four principles, no need to change from family life to renounced life. So with one last example, I would like to conclude the talk today. Emperor Svayambhuva Manu enjoyed life with his wife and subjects and fulfilled his desires without being disturbed by unwanted principles contrary to the process of religion. Every day he used to listen to the pastimes of the Lord with a loving heart. Purport, Prabhupada says, this is verse number 322-33. Third canto, 22-33. There is no restriction against living with a wife and children, but life should be so conducted that one may not go against the principles of religion, economic development, regulated sense enjoyment and ultimately liberation from Dharmartha Kamamoksha. The Vedic principles are designed in such a way that the conditioned souls who have come to this material existence may be guided in fulfilling their material desires and at the same time be liberated and go back home, back to Godhead. It is understood that Emperor Svayambhuva Manu enjoyed his household life by following these principles. So I read so many letters of Prabhupada because this will give you an idea what Prabhupada means about this asakti rana vishvanga putra dhar griha adishu, isn't it? So I was quoting some examples of Bharat Maharaj or such people. Recently we were reading in Brahmachari class from the 7th canto how a Brahmachari is supposed to live, isn't it? So Brahmachari is supposed to have tree bark. So many of our Brahmacharis said that will be too inconvenient to wear tree bark, no. Isn't it? So wearing tree bark, and if you come to class, what will happen? Isn't it? Or there are many things like that, principles. So Prabhupada has, according to time, place and circumstance, has explained how things should be followed. For example, you know, one should not, one should go, for example, barefoot, one should not wear anything or what. There are many rules for even renunciates, if you see like that. And because we are preaching in cities, and especially ours is a preaching mission, even fly in planes, what is bigger, walking on ground. But why adjusting the principles given in the scriptures, one should not lose the spirit behind the principles. That's very important. The spirit is what is emphasized in the scriptures and we follow. So for example, kings like Bharat Maharaj left everything and went to the forest for practicing spiritual life. So Prabhupada says a vanaprastha means in ISKCON Prabhupada says vanaprastha means those who are totally devoted to Krishna service. Those who don't have anything else in life. Their main goal is serving Krishna, husband and wife. Their full focus is only on Krishna consciousness. So, what is being condemned here is taking all the resources for material enjoyment. And also, as time passes, the time also teaches valuable lessons. Ravindra Swarup Prabhu says this. Ravindra Swarup Prabhu is saying that when we were all young, we were very much fascinated by material enjoyment. But as time progresses, what happens is the body gets a little older. As the body gets older, the wrinkles come, like you must have seen in the movie, that last Truth of Life movie. Body gets wrinkles, the body doesn't cooperate, there are diseases and problems, varieties of problems. And whatever life will be, family life or whatever, life becomes simply like settling one problem after another. One problem comes, you settle it, by the time new one pops up, settle it, and then third one pops up, like that. But when one is in youthful stage, lot of people are mostly in a dream world when they are in youth stage. Like for example, mother, father, if they have a young girl, they are very afraid. She should not, go in their religious path. I mean, she should not be spoiled by some other man. At the same time, they also fear that she also should not run away. They have fear. Similarly, if they have a young boy, they are very fearful. This fellow is all the time sitting in computer, playing computer games, going to the cyber. He is hardly coming home. And we want to see that he doesn't go in the wrong path. He should not become a drug addict. He should not become a chain smoker or whatever. They have a lot of fear. But parents fear more than the children. You have experience of this, isn't it? Because parents have already experienced the world. They have grown up. They have seen what will give happiness and what will not give happiness. Now they have that maturity, But the children in that youthful stage don't have the maturity. And that's the problem. So if someone successfully crosses the youth without falling prey to religion, he is very fortunate. If one can pass the youth, when you become 35, 40, 45, 50, your body is finished. Gradually, over a period of time, then it's more or less settling problems. Like in Ayurveda, they say, beyond 40, the problems begin. The body starts giving, you'll get arthritis, leg pain, knee pain, body pain, joint pain. If you sit, you cannot stand. If you stand, you can't sit. So many problems will start. So, and then repairing the body takes most of the time. Then one actually doesn't think of so much enjoyment, ideally speaking. So one is repairing the body and goes on thinking of enjoyment, what can be done. But in general principle is, he says, time also teaches good lessons as we go up. But when one is in youth, then all one's passion should be completely doubted in Krishna service. Prabhupada called even a 50-year-old people to be young people. One place Prabhupada, in conversation Prabhupada says, up to 50 you are a young man, Prabhupada says. That means one has to utilize all one's energies in Krishna service. So Prabhupada appreciates Grihastha very much in his letters and everything. You don't find Prabhupada saying anywhere that they have to give up their wife, children and take sannyas. Very rarely Prabhupada did that. Maybe with like Kamal Krishna Maharaj or some people like that. In Tamal Krishna Maharaj's case, Tamal Krishna Maharaj actually was living with Himavati and Hamsadutta Prabhu, isn't it? He was living with 3-4 grihasthas, and he also thought that everyone should marry. So he then wrote to Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, what about my marriage?" Prabhupada said, you want to marry? Then he wrote back saying that, "I don't know, but I think I have to marry because all of us are married, I also have to marry." And of course he got married, but within a year he got renounced completely because he felt it's a big impediment to his propagation of Krishna consciousness. That's a very big pastime. How he took sannyas, he was like, you know, sitting outside Prabhupada's room with a danda prepared ready to take sannyas. Actually all Matajis are also there. Prabhupada asked all Matajis, all of you, do you give permission for him to take sannyas? None of the Matajis permitted. And all the Prabhuji said, "Jai Jai Prabhupada, thank you sannyas." So after a long discussion, several days, several weeks, Prabhupada saw his very firm determination and take sannyas, and then he gave sannyas to him. But it's very very rare, actually, 1 out of 1,000. Prabhupada would never do that. Allowing a person to reject his wife and children and taking sannyas. Prabhupada appreciated, in fact one grihastha wrote to Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, you are already a sannyasi," Prabhupada wrote to him. He said, "You are living like a sannyasi. Probably if you take sannyas, you know, you'll be getting too much respect, you won't do so much as much as you're doing now. Now better you continue as a grihastha only." Prabhupada wrote to one person like that. He was doing a lot of service. He and his wife were very dedicated. So, anashita karma phalam, karyam karma karotiya sasannyasi. Cha yogi, cha jnani ragna chakriya. That is the principle. That means without attaching the fruits, when one engages one's body, mind, words and serving Krishna, such a person is a sannyasi. So whether man or woman, they are called sannyasi when they utilize all the resources in Krishna service completely, without using any of them for the gratification of the senses. So in this way, asakti rana bishvanga putra dara grihadishu, one can develop detachment if one spiritualizes everything that Krishna has given us. So what is because grihastha, even a brahmachari, if he does not spiritualize all the resources Krishna has given, then he can become attached. That is why Krishna in the third chapter talks about a detached householder and attached sannyasi. He is speaking about the detached householder and attached sannyasi. He is telling Arjuna, don't become sannyasi, you be a detached householder. He is telling him in Bhagavad Gita. So same principle Prabhupada also taught to grihasthas, that they have to be detached. In what sense they can be detached? By doing those four things which I was telling you. Prabhupada writes in many places. Reciting Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, eating only prasadam, chanting Hare Krishna and worshipping deities. Then the home turns into a temple and ashram. Then there is no material attachment there. Everyone lives for Krishna only. It's a wonderful place. And such a place can become a place of inspiration for so many people to follow the path of Krishna consciousness. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. I exceeded the time. If you have questions, you can entertain questions next time. Next class. Shri Prabhupada ki, Shrimad Bhagavad Gita ki.